Then Paul stood in front of the Areopagus and said, "Athenians, I see how extremely religious you are in every way. For as I went through your city and looked carefully at the objects of your worship, I found among them an altar with the inscription, 'To an unknown God.' What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim you.
These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, when no plant of the field was yet in the earth and no herb of the field had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was no one to till the ground. But a stream would rise from the earth and water the whole face of the ground. Then the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. And then the Lord God planted a garden in Eden in the east, and there he put the man whom he had formed. Out of the ground the Lord God made to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, and the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
The God who made the world and everything in it, he who is Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in shrines made by human hands, nor is he served by human hands, as though he needed anything, since he himself gives all mortals life and breath and living, and all things. From one ancestor he made all nations to inhabit the whole earth, and he allotted the times of their existence and the boundaries of the places where they would live, so that they would search for God, and perhaps grope for him and find him, though indeed he is not far from each one of us."
Then the Lord God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helper as his partner." So out of the ground the Lord God formed every animal of the field and every bird of the air, and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called each living creature, that was its name. The man gave names to all cattle and to the birds of the air and to every animal of the field. But for the man there was not found a helper as his partner. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept. Then he took one of his ribs and closed up its place with flesh. And the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man he made into a woman and brought her to the man.
"For in him we live and move and have our being, as even some of your own poets have said, for we too are his offspring."
Two Athenian philosophers, Academicus and Argumentates, meet following Paul's address to the Areopagus.
"Greetings, Argumentates. I deduce from the direction of your walk and your look of concentrated assessment that you have come from the Areopagus."
"Your hypothesis is indeed correct, Academicus, and I am deeply troubled by the words that were spoken by Paul of Tarsus."
"Troubled? How so, Argumentatus?"
"Have you not yet constructed the logical outcome if we are to take him at his word?"
"If I could attack the premise of your question, Argumentatus, to quote, unquote, take him at his word, as you so imprecisely say, only requires us to acknowledge and assimilate his words within the broader pantheon of our acquired learning. All learning is knowledge, knowledge is power, so the more learning we assimilate, the more powerful we become."
"Spoken like a true philosopher, Academicus."
"What? Exceedingly wise? And constructed with unassailable logic?"
"No, completely incomprehensible and constructed from impenetrable sentences. Anyway, persuasive though your argument might have been on an academic level, I refute its inner logic. For whilst received learning may indeed advance our knowledge, the words of Paul of Tarsus incontrovertibly preclude the pantheonic approach towards spiritual enlightenment."
"Eh?
we can't accept his words as true and continue to worship all the other gods.
Oh, come, argumentatives. You surely don't suggest that truth can ever be an absolute.
Paul of Tarsus did.
There is reason in your proposal, but what is the proof he offered?
Have I gone to a different page?
Sorry. I didn't have Paul of Tarsus in my script.
The first reason is that Paul spoke of a God who cannot be constrained by a human temple or neatly characterized for our convenience. This is not some God who can be added to an accumulated body of understanding. This is a God who will completely turn our understanding on its head. This is our unknown God. Two Athenian philosophers, Academicus and Argumentates, meet following Paul's address to the Areopagus.
Greetings, Argumentates. I deduce from the direction of your walk and your look of concentrated assessment that you have come from the Areopagus.
Your hypothesis is indeed correct, Academicus, and I am deeply troubled by the words that were spoken by Paul of Tarsus.
Troubled? How so, Argumentatus?
Have you not yet constructed the logical outcome if we are to take him at his word?
If I could attack the premise of your question, Argumentatus, to quote, unquote, take him at his word as you so imprecisely say, only requires us to acknowledge and assimilate his words within the broader pantheon of our acquired learning. All learning is knowledge, knowledge is power, so the more learning we assimilate, the more powerful we become.
Spoken like a true philosopher, Academicus.
What? Exceedingly wise? And constructed with unassailable logic?
No. Completely incomprehensible and constructed from impenetrable sentences. Anyway, persuasive though your argument might have been on an academic level, I refute its inner logic, for whilst received learning may indeed advance our knowledge, the words of Paul of Tarsus incontrovertibly preclude the pantheonic approach towards spiritual enlightenment. We can't accept his words as true and continue to worship all the other gods.
Oh, come, Argumentatus. You surely don't suggest that truth can ever be an absolute.
Paul of Tarsus did.
There is reason in your proposal, but what is the proof he offered?
Have I gone to a different page?
Sorry. I didn't have Paul of Tarsus in my script.
The first reason is that Paul spoke of a God who cannot be constrained by a human temple or neatly characterized for our convenience. This is not some God who can be added to an accumulated body of understanding. This is a God who will completely turn our understanding on its head. This is our unknown God.
You're being alarmist and illogical, my friend. This God cannot replace our unknown God, or even be our unknown God, however important he may be. The altar to an unknown God is a central principle in our philosophy, for it acknowledges that there will always be the unknown. We must have an altar to the unknown, for we can never know everything.
But that's the root of my embrotherment. Does that not mean that the altar to an unknown God is simply a shrine to our own ignorance? It's one thing being open-minded, but believing in everything with the proviso that you might have missed something out, That's silly.
But logically, the opposite to believing in everything is believing in nothing.
No, I refute that logic. By believing in everything, we already believe in nothing. The opposite is to believe in something.
But why should we choose to believe in this particular something? Mm-hmm. The unknown God, who will presumably have to be rebranded if we decide that we do not know him after all, that we do know him after all, what does he have over other gods?
Apart from the fact that he's not a model of an animal crafted out of some kind of metal by one of our own people.
Yes. Putting that aside for the moment.
How about this then? Paul of Tarsus claimed to offer us proof.
How dare you ever utter such a word in Athens? What use is proof to learned men? If we have proof, what are we to argue about?
If one thing is proved, might there not be other things to argue about, like who supports the best football team, or whose turn it is to do the washing up?
There is reason in your proposal, but what is the proof that he offered?
He said that proof was in God's raising of the man he appointed from the dead.
But that is completely illogical. A thing once dead must remain dead.
That is a thesis that must remain merely probable and only until proved wrong, and if the God who made the world and everything chose to give life, do you not think he would succeed?
But that is also completely illogical. Why would God allow his appointed one to die and then raise him from the dead?
Perhaps to show that he is not bound by logic. Perhaps to show that he is a living God, greater than any statue made by a human being. Perhaps so that he would no longer be an unknown God.
But if this God would overturn logic, how can we think? How can we know anything? Without logic, what are we left with?
Faith? Every year since 2003, a friend in Aylesbury has been sending me the Methodist prayer handbook for the current year. I received mine the other day and I was delighted to see that the theme would be the Olympic Games for 2011-12, which is their year. And the theme that comes from St. Paul is run the race. And all of the prayers and themes are based around this being involved. And I was talking with a colleague in the ministry recently who said he loved the Olympic Games, and particularly Bruce McAvaney's commentary. And he just loves to hear him describing what's going on. But he went on to say, but that's not the main game. The main game is down there on the arena where people are involved and exercising to the best of their ability to try and come first and so on. As we hear the argument that Paul puts up in the Areopagus, Mars Hill near the Acropolis in Athens, the place where great discussions took place, as we heard just now, between Academicus and Argumentates. The philosophers were there, the Epicureans, the Stoics. Well, you know, we know about Stoics. We're often told when we're young, if we fall over and hurt our knee, you've got to be Stoic, you know, you've got to put up with it. And that was their kind of philosophy. It's almost like the stiff upper lip in the face of adversity, you just got on with it. The Epicureans, on the other hand, were those who said, well, look, you know, we're only here for a short time. We may as well live, eat and be merry, for tomorrow we die. These were the people who were listening to Paul's argument that finishes up with that marvellous statement, for in him we live and move and have our being. This was in the face of those philosophers. And Paul was relating to the story that we heard intertwined with that this morning from Genesis. That never get tired of hearing story. It's a wonderful story. There's that marvellous kind of blessing at each step of the way. And God saw that it was good. And what have we been doing since then? Doing so much to destroy it. This season of creation is new to our lectionary. And so we're asked to concentrate on forests. Well, there was a forest, wasn't there, in that story, called Eden. A marvellous place where provision was made and people enjoyed it. We don't live in a garden anymore. We're sort of sometimes in a wilderness. So Paul is reminding us to come back to our roots. For in him we live and move and have our being. Paul was wandering around waiting for colleagues to join him. And he saw all these gods. Now, there was a god to give you luck. There was a god to give you good health. There was a god to help you win competitions and win Vespers. There was a god to help you at football and so on. You haven't been praying to that one, oh, Bruce. All of these gods, because that's what controlled the world. And he picked up on this altar to the unknown God. They were so afeard that they would offend a God if they left the God out. That's why the altar was there, just in case. And Paul picked up on that and said, we declare to you. It's interesting that he didn't quote the Bible. He wasn't like the street preachers in Rundle Mall. He quoted their own poets. He was a great preacher. He understood his audience. And he reminded them that they knew that what was at the basis of all, he was declaring to them. In this God, we live and move and have our being. And that connectedness to this God is a connectedness to the earth and to the peoples of the earth. Our friend Muhammad says, we share peace together. We look for peace together. And these stories today from Paul and from the Book of Beginnings remind us that in God, we live and move and have our being, and we respond by the way we care for the forests, the world, and each other. Go well. Go in peace.